is going in and out real bad?
Yes, it is. Yes. Okay.
That's not good.
I'll keep on talking now, though.
On a scale of 0 to 10, how bad is it going in and out?
Probably like a...
Like a 6.
Hello?
It's going in and out, like you said, like a 6.
No, I said like a 7, but that's fine. Go ahead. As long as you can hear me.
I'm hearing you good. I'm hearing you, and
okay.
You sound real clear.
Okay, that's
okay.
Great.
Well, let's get started. Tell me a little bit about the entrepreneurial mindset of the Kenya Allison.
My mindset?
Yeah.
I don't even know how to answer that question. I can say this is something
You're a business professional. Tell me a little bit about how you think that led you to be an entrepreneur.
Okay, well, I was working for McBride Research Laboratories for 10.5 years, and that's one of the major ethnic product lines in the United States. And we're up against like a firm. That's our major competitor as a firm. We actually are in all of the cosmetology schools, and also we're in JCPenney's. So actually, when I first started working with them, coming on board, I was actually their first manager that they hired as an area sales manager / regional sales manager. They tried to actually, over the years, they tried to add on a few more regional sales managers, but none of them really panned out, just leaving one area sales manager for the whole company. So three times I had applied for national sales manager position. And being that is a family-owned company, it was only but so far I can get up, you know, attained to within the company. National sales manager was the only highest position I can get. So, but three times they refused to give me national sales manager position. First time, they hired somebody from outside. And then, after that, I decided to go back and get my master's in business. So then when the position came up again, I applied for it again. Didn't get it. They hired somebody outside, and third time they did the same thing. So back then, you know, now we're only down to one. Myself as the only area sales manager, I was like, you know, they're going to terminate this position, you know, because I was making quite a bit of money at the time for a long time. And pretty much that's what they did like 6 months later. So that was something I was like forced into, was launching my own product line, but that's not something that I really wanted to do, because I could have just stayed there forever and retired there. But the thing is that I knew so much, and at the time when I left, I never knew how much I knew. And I think that was one of the reasons. My family actually has had a liquor store in Adela, Kentucky for 30 years. So they still have the liquor store up in Buffalo, New York. And we've had that over 30 years. When my grandmother passed away when I was 16, my grandfather got rid of the deli because he didn't want to have both businesses. So basically it was bent in my blood. So I guess it was the next obvious step for me to do.
Okay. Well, tell me about those first steps away from McBride into being your own entrepreneur.
Okay. That actually has been such a transition for me because I have been so used to working for other people and making a lot of money for other people that it has definitely been a hard transition for me to realize that I have to put myself first and the business has to be first. So that's something that I'm struggling to learn how to get used to being the president or the CEO, and everybody's coming to you, because normally I was making millions for other companies, and that's easy for me. I can go hard for another company. But now that, you know, it's for myself, that's something that I have to, I don't want to say I'm embarrassed, but I know, like, you know, I'm shy. Like, I'm definitely not shy, but now I have to really put myself at the forefront when I really like making other people great, but like that. So now I have to be out there and just say, hey, you know, managing people I have a problem with, but now being the owner of something is something definitely different. So I had, I left Design Essentials in 2009, so, but that has been a hard transition because as far as when you talk about products, you want to talk about the business, I know it like the back of my hand. And when I say that I can come up with new ideas, marketing strategies, everything, that's so easy for me. But now you're telling me to do it for myself. So that transition is what I've been doing. So.
Now, you're expressing some of the difficulty in transitioning from being behind the scenes to
mm-hmm.
being in the center. What would you say
you've
done to facilitate that transition regarding your business plan and the organization of your current company, NV?
Well, right now, the way that my company is, what I did was I came to Buffalo, New York to do a soft launch up here. And that's where I'm from, but I live in, you know, North Carolina. So I wanted to actually see how it feels. That I just tested out all my products, tested out just the whole realm of running a company up here since, I guess, like, since the beginning of the year, since the beginning of this year. Because once I hit down north of South Carolina, where that was my territory, I knew I had to be on point. So I came up here, where, you know, from my hometown, and really tried to get myself together. But it was really I had to mentally prepare myself, that, hey, you're going to be broke for a long time right now. And so that's number one. But it's so much on the personal side that I had to get used to. Like, for example, getting used to that, hey, all your family members and friends is not going to approve. You know, they're not going to agree with it. They probably, there's going to be people out there that just assume that you're just another bootleg business and you're going to fail. There's going to be people that think that you are not qualified enough to start this company. So all those oppositions, I had to be able to understand that that's going to happen every day. And to build up a tolerance for it. So that's really has been the hardest thing, is building up my tolerance and building up my self-confidence and say, hey, well, everybody's not going to agree with me, because normally everybody do agree with me. But now, I'm faced with things where people are not agreeing with me. And despite that, I still have to go on and, you know, because it's something, I only have this one shot to do it for myself.
Right. Okay.
See, so to answer your stuff,
maybe
I tried the department. So it's such a small company right now. It's just me. My boyfriend helps me with, like, the packaging and stuff like that. And it's just really myself right now. So you just two. Maybe just one full-time, one part-time. And I'm at this point right now that I'm looking for sales reps. So I really don't have any organizational type of strategy. I don't have to do that right now because it's just myself, you know.
Okay. Let me ask you this question. As you transition into starting NV, what were some of the preliminary things you did to prepare for that? Did you do a business plan? Did you seek up venture capital? Did you do any fundraising? Tell me a little bit about that.
I did a business plan. I also, investors, I wasn't looking for investors because I just knew myself worth, and I just really do not want to even give anybody else any of my money. So I was like, no, I'll, you know, start it on my own. I did a withdrawal of my retirement fund and took money out. I said, if I can't believe in myself, you know, nobody else will. So that wasn't anything, you know, that wasn't nothing for me to take the money out because, mama, I don't have any kids. I've never been married, so I really don't have any responsibilities just for myself. And at the end of the day, I knew if this did fail, I could always go back and work for somebody else. Number three, what I also did was, at the time, which was such a major, major mistake, is that I decided to do a consulting agreement for another product line up in Chicago. And I worked on that project for like up to 8 months, and they have yet to, they got like $20,000 because they need to pay me. So that hurt me financially. And I need to take them to court and everything. So, but in between time, when I still needed funding, I had to do a list of my favorite 50 friends, and I asked them to give me $100. And that was pretty successful.
And they were pretty helpful?
Yeah, that was pretty successful. I raised around $4,000, something like that.
Okay.
And I could have raised more, but the other ones didn't. They wasn't too comfortable with the internet, paying on the internet, and that was too far to go there and pick up the money.
Right. Right. I know a lot of people have issues with that. They don't think it's safe. You're making me think about what I do. And in this case, the whole safe. Can I ask you a question? You've shown and told me that you have a great expertise in your field, and you're just getting started. What made you locate in North Carolina, and why Greensboro particularly?
Well, I was a manager for Rent-A-Center up in Buffalo, New York, and then they transferred me down to North Carolina, and then from there, they were bought out by Rentway, but they kept the name Rent-A-Center, and so during that time, that was my easiest time that I can transition out due to the fact that I wouldn't have to pay for the relocation fee. So at the time, I started interviewing, and that's when Design Central, they was looking for an area sales manager. So that's how I received my transition from down here to, from up here to North Carolina. Then from there, afterwards, I did launch it in, I did have my office in Charlotte. But because I traveled so much, it was easier and better for me to have the office in Greensboro where my boyfriend is located at, because he's going to be the person that's going to be shipping out, and he has his own business too, so it was easier to do that.
Okay. Let's switch from the professional world to the educational world and talk about your MBA program at Winthrop. How has that helped you in your business, or has it not helped you in starting doing MBA?
It hasn't, because that program was more so focused on big business. So that really, it really didn't help me. Only thing I can say on a personal level is that I didn't, it helped me to in other personal ways. Like, for example, I had a hard time those 2 years when I went up, because I was in the EMBA program, and I was the youngest person and the only black female in that group. Well, I was the only black person in that group. But so that was my first time really dealing with groups for the whole 2 years. In my group, I had, two white females and one white male. Now, the problem was that I never faced ever, because I didn't understand, when I first started that first day of school, everybody had laptops. I didn't have a laptop. So I went home, so I called my mother, not crying, "Mom, everybody got laptops." So my mother sent me a laptop, bought me a laptop by the end of that week. And then the second thing was that everybody else was coming, from Duke Energy, from really, big, companies. And here I'm coming from a small little black company that they heard nothing about. Knew nothing about. So they basically treated me, the females in the group treated me very harshly. They was pretty mean to me. And basically, so how they treated me, basically my performance followed. So my self-confidence sunk, everything sunk. So I wasn't really the normal Takenya Allison like I would normally have been, because these were different type of dynamics. And so they was playing dirty for those 2 years, and that was kind of hard because I had nobody to really talk to or really, say like, yeah, I know that happened. Yeah, that sucks.
Now you bring up an interesting point, being a woman of color at the graduate level. Were there no programs at the university or in your department that provided you any support or outlet or expression?
No.
I see.
No, not at all.
And I guess there were
And
no other minority males in the program.
there was my friend Jerry Brown, but he dropped out because it was like
Ah.
you was taking five. Yeah, because we only went there once a week. The first week we had to stay on campus, and then we went there once a week. But we had five courses, and each course was like an hour, each class was an hour and 45 minutes long. And so it was very intense, very fast paced, so they expected you to do a lot of groups, to meet up in groups every day, pretty much. And being that I was the regional manager, I was always traveling, and they had a basically like a 9-to-5 job, so they would set up the group meeting at 5:30 on a Wednesday, and knowing that I probably needed to be in Augusta, Georgia for that week, and see so. That was definitely a lot of pressure on me. See, so then if I was 15 minutes late, having to drive like 3 hours back, they would be fussing, things of that nature. It came to a point where I was taking what I think micro and macroeconomics, that I had to miss a couple of days. Like a couple of days is huge, in that program. And I had to go to Atlanta for work. I mean, that's something that I could not skip out. Work was not planned. That was our annual meeting. So I missed like two crucial classes, and then the next time I had to take my midterm, and but because I was didn't have so much of the information and notes that I received what a 55 on that exam, so and so much so that this professor said, "Well, Tahini, maybe you want to drop out of the program." I was like, "Oh, that's not an option." I mean, because that's how hard it was for me, And I was like, I asked some of my classmates, I said, "Well, could you let me have a note?" They was like, "No, it's not true. It's not our responsibility to help you pass." So after they told me that one time, I said, "Okay, I see where we rolling at." So after that, I had to go to my professors every day after school. I had to meet with them, and that's how. And so lucky that the other people did bad on that exam that he gave a retake. And a retake, like the week later, I got an 80 on it. And he said that
Oh,
I
wow.
really worked. He said I really worked hard for that 80. He said I did, but in any case, I graduated with a B in a course. And that was just a little bit about the dynamics that I had to do.
That's a real battle for you. And
Yeah, it was
I can
more.
empathize.
It
I can
was more
empathize.
stuff that went on. Thank you.
Graduate school is tough on a lot of people. That's why a lot of people start and they don't finish. The people make it difficult. But you
Yeah.
did graduate. Congratulations. Now tell me, you got your bachelor's and your master's, and I see that you are pursuing a master's in project management at Western Carolina. Tell me your reasons for pursuing that, and how is that going to help NV be a success?
Well, I finished that program this past summer in August. Really, I was not even happy with that program. I fussed about it the whole end. I mean, the people were great, everything else was great. But the actual, where project management is at in a whole, I didn't like it. Not, it had nothing to do with the professors or nothing else. But every time that all our work assignments was basically on big companies. And so it was nothing, never something that you could really, it was hard to apply it to me. It was hard to apply it to my industry. So, and even the professor said, "Hey, we haven't gotten there yet with project management." It was very hard to get the research or the things that I wanted to talk about. So I really wasn't happy with that program too much.
I see. You make an excellent point there about the field being applicable to small businesses. I think you make a key point there because it is the small business, not your large corporations, that are the backbone of the economy. Now, what you're talking about that issue, are you slated to graduate this year?
The last what I and see, this is what I have to talk to my professor about, because the for project management, it's like the last course. It's basically like an independent study. And I was telling him that, because I was in Buffalo, New York, and because my money was short, I was working at my grandfather's liquor store 36 hours, like 30 to 36 hours a week there, then doing envy and trying to finish this course. So I was like totally overwhelmed. And I tried to withdraw the course, and the professor said I couldn't. So, and I'm asking for help and all this other stuff, but at the end of the day, he gave me a C, so I may have to take this course over. So I'm not too happy about that. Because I
So if
missed,
you'd
like,
gotten a B, you would have
I've been
graduated.
fine. Yeah. I may have to, because it was like two assignments I missed.
So you're taking entrepreneurship as one of your electives.
No, I'm going to get a master. I'm going to get a master. See, I see that you have a lot of masters too, so I have to, keep up with you. So,
You're already ahead of me. You're already ahead of me. Impressive. So your intent is to finish up your NPM and then you're going to be at Western Carolina. Is that correct?
right.
Now, as we finish up this conversation on your education, tell me, after your experiences at Winthrop in the NP program of Western Carolina, what led you to go into entrepreneurship at Western Carolina?
Because once I looked at the curriculum, I said, this is something I should have probably took this instead of the NPM program, because I really liked all the subjects, and I feel like this is really great, being that since my company is a startup and the program starts with startup companies, and I can think that my company can grow as I continue to grow within the entrepreneurship program.
I see. Okay. Now, Takenia, I want to ask you a couple of questions about your day-to-day in your business. Tell me a little bit, what is an average day for you starting on a Monday and then a week to Friday running NV?
On Mondays and Tuesdays, I do office work. So basically, I don't know if you had it. I don't know if you looked at my website, but I built up my own website. So I did basically. So I had to teach myself how to do that. So I had to teach myself a lot how to do my own brochures, anything. I've taught myself how to do those things instead of outsourcing, because I've outsourced two times to get my website built up. And people do not do it correctly. So Mondays and Tuesdays, I try to hold that for those type of work, to do all my administrative work. If I'm in sales, do I need to switch to marketing? Do I need to switch to education department or, packaging, warehousing? So those are the things I do on Mondays and Tuesdays. Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays, I try to be out in the field selling MV products.
How are things going for NV right now overall? If you had to give it a A, B, or C, what grade would you give it, or would you say it's a work in progress?
It's a work in progress, but I can still give it a grade though. Because I saw one great article where they was talking about for startups, how do you measure yourself? And see, so I looked at this article. So based upon those their criteria, I'm doing very well. Not financially, but as far as if you look at where I'm at as far as presence, like even on Facebook, my Facebook page, I have like close to 2,700 people on my page, our personal page, and most of them are hairstylists and barbers. But if you look on Envy page as well, totally different, because a lot of those people are not my friends. I have another 1,971 people. So just being able to get the information out right there, that's a huge avenue. And people are always asking me about the products. But I realize that a lot of people do not like to purchase online. They're not people that's going to purchase the product online, but they read the information about Envy online. See, so now is the time that I really have to get out there in the field to reach all those people who want to use the product. Want to use the product. So I give myself maybe like a B at this point.
Okay. You're talking about being out in the field, which is really where the rubber meets the road.
Mm-hmm.
Has that been difficult for you?
No, that's something I did every day for like 11 years. That's easy for me.
So when you're out there in the field promoting Envy's products, how do you put it down out there in the field?
How do I put it down? What you mean? I could take that. It was like...
You go out there
huh?
in the field, what's your mindset, what's your game plan, what's your strategy in offering the product and also making a sale?
When I just go out in the field, basically, there's a few things that you have to do just when you're distributing hair products. You basically ask for the salon manager or owner, you set up a time where you can actually introduce the product to them. And then actually you go in there and you want to have a class to set up, then you can see a demonstration. From there, like right now, I have upcoming next Monday, I have a huge hair show in this area. So that way they can get to see how the relaxer system works. But that's huge. Education is what's push sales, so more classes in salons. I think you have a class inside the salon. Targeting schools, because you want the schools, once the students leave, graduate from school, you want them to be able to use the product. But definitely, I have two types of events. I have an event that catering just for professionals, but then I also have an event catering to the consumer, because you want to be able to drive those sales into the salon, and you want them to ask about Envy salon products once they're in the salon. So the more that we are out there targeting the consumer, and I do that by having Envy social events where I'm actually, they can test the retail line about prices and learn a little bit more about the products, and then they can go to the stylist to purchase the product.
Yes, and I was looking at your bio. I saw how you had driven sales into salons. So for you, education is a big part of
education is
different.
Yes, because you don't have to be the best salesperson. You don't have to do any of that. You have to be consistent. You need to have an inventory. You need to be there on time. Those are three things. After that, you can be mean. You can be grumpy because the product will speak for itself. You don't have to, when you walk into a salon, you don't give out samples. You get them to purchase that day. You give them package deals. Give them good deals. Something around $20, where it's like, give or take, whether or not it's good or not, $20 is not a big loss to them. So get them to try, you know, something for $20. After that, then they're going to want to see a hair show. They want a class. So you have to show them, and you bring in a technician, a stylist that works for you, that's really good and know how to tell them how to use the products, and then they'll do a demonstration on the models. Once they see that hair that the technician has just, you know, created this wonderful hairstyle, that's what sells.
All right. Now, I was looking through your information. I looked at your website, Facebook, and Indeed. What is unique about the salon products that you offer through Indeed versus what's out there already?
Well, number one, if you look at my bottles, look at this stuff by my bottles. My bottles, and you look at any other ethnic company, my bottles is way over them. My bottles are pretty. They look good. That's number one, just by the look, the aesthetics of my bottles. And the reason why I'm bringing up that, because that's a huge point, because with design, Cornell, the owner, the company, they didn't want to spend too much money on the packaging. But you're catering to women. Women like things that's cute. We will buy a car because it's cute, but we don't know if the engine works. We like how it looks. But that's the truth. I was in the salon, one of my stylists, she was like, oh, I could buy this truck. It looks so nice. I said, well, did you get it checked out? Did you see where the engine worked? She's like, no, no. She didn't try any of that. It's just buy because she thought it was cute. So that's number one. Number two, it must smell good. Once you open up my bottles, the products smell very good. And that's what women like. When they put on perfume, they want it to smell good. And when you're in a shampoo bowl, getting your hair washed, you want like, oh my God, what is that? That smells so good. Then from there, it has to have performance. Now, this is where I try to differentiate myself from the different product lines, because right now, you have the part where you could be sulfate-free and paraben-free. But that's, with those products, cost more. See, so that's where envy is. This is where we are different at, because a lot of my products are sulfate-free and paraben-free. So I am more expensive than the normal other professional ethnic hair care line. So therefore, that's why it's really crucial for the education, because really, I'm not trying to compete on price. I'm competing on service, exceptional product, see, because I really want to be like the Louis Vuitton or the Coach of the hair industry. And this is something I always tell, ask everybody. It's like, black women, we will go and purchase, so spend so much money on Coach, Louis Vuitton. We're just going to talk about purses right now. But where is the black designer purse by a black-owned company? Like, where is the high-end designer purse that everybody, when they see it, they know instinctively by the name that it's a high-end purse? But as much as we spend on purses, there is not a black-owned purse line. There's no. So therefore, they telling me, like, okay, when I'm coming out with this, okay, it costs too much. But I think that we do ourselves a disservice if we say the only time a black company can come out is we always have to be cheap. We only can have cheap products. Because if you ask another hairstylist between Design Essentials and Paul Mitchell, which is a white line, they're going to say Paul Mitchell is better. They're going to say Aveda is better. They're going to say Bumble and Bumble is better. And see, that's all in their head, even though Design Essentials, that product line is made for them. So I didn't want to be that. I didn't want to compete on price. I'm competing on textures of hair. I'm being the best at textures of hair. And myself, I'm a high-end product line. And I just so happen to be black. So that's what makes me different.
I think you bring up a good point there, Takenya, about elevating the mindset and recognizing the capital the black community, black ladies spend on looking and smelling beautiful. I think that's a key mm-hmm. point that you make. Let's go to another point that I want to bring up. As you're getting started, you've been operating NV for 2 years now. I heard you mention in your bio that you have some desire to internationalize NV.
Mm-hmm.
Is that currently part of your strategic plan? And if so, what is your plan for branching out from the U.S. to other countries and abroad?
That is my plan, but that's probably going to be around year 5 that I get to that point. But my plan is actually, I want to first set up, I wanted the microloans that they do over here, and, you know, they do it in smaller companies. I really want to target the women. Now, this time, like, for example, in the United States, a typical distributor in the hair industry is a man. And not a straight man, too. They like straight men, because when you walk into a salon, there's nothing full of women. And another stylist get tired of seeing other women. That's what they deal with every day. So I have to tell you this to say about the international. Now I have to say all of this to tell you the international part. So when a guy comes in that looks good, smells good, dressed really nice, they will pretty much buy anything from him. And now equip them that the guy was actually really fully trained on the line. The guy makes a lot of money, ton of money. Now, flash forward, when I was doing a lot of research, like in Africa, I was really looking into Africa, and I, you know, I look at see how many problems the women are having over there. One of my things is that I want to make them entrepreneurs, and so I don't. It's going to start probably with the microloans to them, but going over there and training them and everything, but going over there and giving them the education and showing them how to actually sell. And going to the salons and basically setting a microloan program to get them started, because I think that that would be a way that they can sort of be able to help themselves, and because there's a lot of violence towards women over there. And so that's, I really want to help the women. I'm going to start with Africa first.
So even though you're an entrepreneur, you wouldn't mind some social change, I see.
I'm very much, yeah. Yeah, I'm very much into it. I haven't been so the last year or two, but there is a lot of social change that, you know, envy is really, you know, it's about that beauty from within has to come first, and being able to, like, regardless of how bad your day is or how bad everybody's talking about you, you still have to walk with your head up, and you still have to believe who you are and what you're about. So that beauty first starts from within yourself. And so having that confidence to keep going on and having that desire and the motivation when everything will just look so bleak. So that's where envy starts from. And so, but with that in mind, you want to be able to uplift somebody else and bring somebody else up too. So we are definitely going to be community focused with a lot, hopefully, like scholarships and just a lot of different charity events. And speaking our mind, being able to speak our mind if something is not correct.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Just like, you know, they have the breast of cancer, you know, the breast, you know, the cancer day where everybody wear pink. You know about that, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so one day, because see, envy is a little bit more radical, right? We are going to have one day, we are a little bit more radical. So one day, I've already thought about it, but I just got to wait till my presence when I get my name out there a little bit bigger and people will know about it. But we're going to have, okay, the No Sex Day. Well, all the women in America, No Sex Day. And that, we're going to take a stand. We're going to take a stand of, you know, domestic violence, taking a stance on all these different issues that women go through. So it was like, no women can have sex that day.
You won't get no argument from me. You are talking about that would have a big impact.
Yeah. And I'm gonna have a lot of hate mail coming to me.
You know, you bring up a point when you mentioned Africa, and you mentioned the things that women go through. It is possible without taking advantage of it. So I think that you hit a key point with the NG name. That's going to be very marketing tool. Like I said.
You fading out on me now.
What'd you say?
Hello? You were fading
What'd
out
you
on
say?
me.
Oh,
Can you hear me?
I said I think that, yeah, I can hear you. I think the NV name is going to be a very potent marketing tool for you, because it brings up a lot of things that affects how people actually look and how they feel about themselves inside. Yeah, it's real well done.
Thank you. Did you look at the
Okay.
logo? Or have you been able to look at the logo?
Yeah, I've seen the website, and the last question that I want to ask you, and I'm interested to hear where you go with this. Tell me about the spirit of a hustler.
The spirit of a hustler. Well, did you read something that I said about that?
Well, as I was learning about you, I saw on your web pages through WordPress, you're talking about the
Yeah, well,
spirit.
my blog. My blog.
Yeah. So tell me about the spirit of the hustler.
Well, my family, one thing I could say about this, and that's something where I say about the community, is like, I meet in Buffalo, there's so many people that's you know, selling drugs and stuff like that. And you look at them, they work hard. They be out there on the streets all day. But whether or not they make any money, and it's pretty dangerous what they do. But and my focus is to take the spirit of a hustler, but being a hustler to businesswoman is totally different. And so it's twofold in this whole situation. To have a hustler mentality to me is that you always, it's a do or die at this point, is that the only person that you can rely on is yourself. The only person you can depend on is yourself. At the end of the day, you can't say, oh, I didn't make any money and start crying. No, you still have bills to pay. So the spirit of hustle is like you don't give up, you don't quit, you don't come home until you reach that goal. You have to do whatever is survival of the fittest, it's Darwinism. You have to do whatever it takes to make sure that you make a certain amount of money by the end of that day, because there's no room for error. Who are you going to cry home to? Is somebody else going to give you no money? No. So that's where the spirit of the hustler comes in. It's that you just can't give up, and you just can't say, oh, it's raining outside, I can't go outside, or it's snowing outside, I can't go outside, or I'm sick. No, you still got to get out there because you're the only person that you can rely on right now.
I think Nas and Tupac would appreciate that, how you explain that. You're making me think of Nas' Street Dreamer remix that he did with when you explain it like that. Well, as you close out with one final question, you talked about the amount of income that you earned when you were working for those companies and how that was for you and the change going to running your own business. Mm-hmm. Looking at yourself 5 to 10 years out, given the current state of the local, state, and national economy, and the global economy, do you see yourself having a comfortable retirement, and would you consider yourself prepared financially for what is going on out here regarding debt?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. A little more.
Well, it's kind of funny. It's like, it's just like I knew I was going to get fired for 6 months, or that they was going to terminate, like, you know, just terminate all the positions. Like, I already know I'm going to be successful. It's I don't know if you want to call it faith. I mean, I definitely believe in God. And every day I have a bad day, I do know that that's a short term, but long term, I already know I have the faith that I am going to be very successful. So only thing I have to do is my due diligence and make sure that it's happened. I already have a plan, and I just know it. I mean, I don't know how to explain it. I mean, but I know it. I mean, I can show you financially where I should be on track, how I should be in my business plan in 5 years, 10 years, because I've already did that. But regardless of how anything, see, when it comes to the hair industry, regardless of how, if we go into a recession or a depression, people still get their hair done. That's something that doesn't really change. You may have different times of the year, or they may switch up a different type of product. But people always, especially during depression, during recession, they probably go so more so because that's the only thing they have to make themselves feel good, because they don't have any money, is to go to the salons and make sure that the hair is done and their nails are done. But
yeah, you
I don't
think of the movie during the Great Depression in the 1930s.
I know, if we did. I mean, I just did by the research in 1930s. That was a situation where, if you look at it, people still going to the salons, and, you know, they wasn't going to nail shops, but still going to the salons and still getting their hair done. It doesn't really fluctuate. It doesn't really change that much. You may have to alter your distribution strategy. You may have to alter or modify your formulations and use maybe cheaper raw materials to drop down your price, or, you know, come up with a different line that's more compatible, suitable. But you really would not have to. But the hair industry is something that people always, you know, do. You have to change some things.
Okay. Well, Ms. Allison, thank you for giving me those thoughtful responses and giving me an insight to who you are, where you come from, and the vision that you have for NV. I want to tell you that you are the first, you are the inaugural interview for the Entrepreneurial Collegian, and I think you will do us well in being the first entrepreneur student that we've interviewed. So, I thank you, and I think you will be a smash success. If I could give you one comment.
Sure.
You have an asset, and do you know what it is?
Have you seen me? Have you seen my photos? Sorry,
I don't know. I don't know, but you have a unique voice.
Yeah,
you have a unique voice.
Thank you.
Yeah, so in doing your work, you mentioned how women want to look good, they want to smell good, and you also talk about the inner beauty. One of the things I think is lacking for women is the beauty of the spirit, mind, and body, how they can amplify each other. And I think that you can, ennoble the really feeling of being not beautiful. I see a lot in women of color. So I think that you, in doing, adding a social justice component to what you're doing, you're going to hit the biggest market out there, because the biggest market is the market for people of color, not white people, because most people are people of color. And I think as you internationalize your business, that is going to hit such a niche, because to me, it's an underserved community with a quality product. That, to me, is the untapped opportunity. To me.
You're right.
I think
you saw my website.
I did.
No, that's my sister. That's the main photo. That's my baby sister right there.
No brothers?
No brothers, just me and her. We're 16 years apart. She's finishing up her master's in social work right now.
Okay. That's all right. Well, we are all wrapped up. So I'm going to stop the tape right now. So we will stop recording. We are